since I began to run statewide. And the wonderful thing about having the support of men like Mr. Knox, who was one of the pillars of this community, and the younger men who were in those very footsteps of being leaders of this community, like Jim Wadsworth, is the fact that they have no axe to grind. There isn't a thing in the world I can do for either of them. Matter of fact, what they do, I'm full of admiration about. Mr. Wadsworth is one of the great civic leaders of this community, and Seymour Knox is not only one of its great bankers, but one of its artistic leaders, who is for years headed the Knox Albright Art Museum, and it still carries, as you know, his name, and will, I hope, forever. So that these two distinguished men have stayed with me is a matter of great pride and satisfaction to me. And I want to thank very much the representatives of the trade unions who are here. I was endorsed by the AFL-CIO of the state, and I have that endorsement. It continues. Thanks to Ray Corbett and Howard Molisani, the two principal officers. And again, it's been a matter of proof to me that labor does not forget its friend. And your presence here lent particularly also in terms of sentiment by the presence of representatives of the retirees is, again, a matter of very profound satisfaction. By the way, the contribution is very important, made to me by the sheet metal workers, and I thank them so much for it, because money raising in this time of terribly expensive television is absolutely critical. I do about a third of my time, my own time, today is spent trying to raise money. That's how serious these questions are. So you can't imagine how much it helps to have a few thousand dollars as a result of this trip here today. And I also would like to thank very much Tom Hobart, who is not here, but who sent representatives. The Teachers Union is one of my greatest supporters, and they have a great deal of manpower, a quarter of a million strong. And they have really replaced what I otherwise would find absolutely impossible to replace, which is the rank and file of a big party organization. But the teachers have stood in for that, and just as numerous and perhaps even more effective. So that has been a great satisfaction to me. I'd like to say a particular word also about the colleges and the universities about which Patricia Reedy spoke. It is a fact, Patricia, that I did stay in Washington, though it turned out not to have been needed. But one never knows. As you have said, we got licked by one vote on a previous try. And I believe my advocacy had a good deal to do with getting that conference report approved. We pass one of these bills every 5 years, and the future of 600,000 college students was at stake, with a special emphasis upon the poorest of those students. Because what I was able to accomplish was particularly helpful to students from very low-income families. We got them an extra $50 million for what is called the Supplementary Educational Opportunity Grant, which goes to the lowest-income families that send students and enables them to go to and enables them to go to private colleges and universities. The nurses, of course, have been with me for a very long time. This is rather a sacred trust, I might tell you, because there was a wonderful woman in the Congress named Bolton. She was from Ohio, and she was a nurse. And as a matter of fact, she replaced her husband, whom she had married because she was his nurse. And as she got older and was going to leave the Congress, she talked with me about who would look after nurses' legislation when she went. And I promised her that I would. Now, this goes a little goes back a little matter of almost 30 years. But I've kept my promise, and the nurses have kept theirs. And I've always looked after nurses' legislation. And as I grew in seniority and influence, I looked after it even better. I've always been on the committee that authors nurses' legislation. And in the present case, the Committee on Labor and Human Resources. So I deeply appreciate their presence here. And I deeply appreciate the presence here also of the building trades. No one is harder hit by unemployment. And constructive policies in this state of an economic character can do them a world of good. And I have worked with them and tried very hard for them. In addition, we just resolved a very interesting and very serious matter to them and their pensions. As you know, or you should know, I'm the author of the ERISA, which is the federal plan to assure workers that they will collect from their private pension plans what is promised. And they were in grave jeopardy of losing all their multi-employer plans, which cover 8 million workers. The non-multi-employer plans cover another 22 to 27 million workers. It's a very big deal, believe me. And by dint of great application and work and putting a lot of things together, we saved those multi-employer plans and brought them under the same insurance system as the non-multi-employer plan. So, excuse me, I really... And finally, I'd like to thank, without excluding anyone, George Wessel, who's been really a hero in my life. I'm a very deep believer in the fact that one of the ways in which to change the economy of our state is through labor management committees, which can deal with problems outside collective bargaining, like absenteeism, alcoholism, drug abuse, recreation, what it will mean to the worker if productivity is improved. Will he get a piece of the action? So on. That technique is transforming three labor markets in this state right now, Elmira, Jamestown, and Buffalo. And we owe it to George Wessel and Dan Roebelin, an industrialist here, who head that committee. Is a very, very great thing which is being done to help make this a better labor market in terms of the workers who are here than it has been. And so as George has stayed with this and stayed with me, I express my great gratitude to him. Now, also I'd like to thank Donna Liu, who is the Erie County Liberal Party, for coming and participating in the program. Without that party, I would have no line at all, and I'd have been wiped out when I lost the primary. So I wish you would communicate that, Donna, to your members and tell them I greatly appreciate it and will do my best to do them proud. And to thank Joe Benbenek of the Steelworkers. They used to have a fellow up here named Maloney, wasn't it? Where's Joe?
Right here.
That's right, yeah. Who was a great friend of mine. I've had a lot to do with the steel workers, including their present troubles. And again, it's been a union that stayed with me for many, many years, and deeply gratifying that they feel justified in continuing. So I thank all my friends and can only give them one promise. I will be what I am. And as I have competently safeguarded their interests within the context of the interests of our state and nation, with, I think, enterprise and creativity and a sensitivity to what's really important, I'll continue to do that. And that, I think, is the only thanks that they want. Now, we have members of the press here, and so with the indulgence of everyone here, I would like to open the floor to questions. Any questions from the press? We had hoped that Al Shanker would get here in time to to meet you all, and Jim Wadsworth and I didn't want to delay you because we expect him momentarily. And if there are no questions from the press to me, perhaps you might be willing to stay a few minutes in the hope, which I still have, that he will arrive. Paul, what was the...
Wes, I called you about 20 minutes ago. It's funny, Wes, the way he's still coming to Buffalo. This opportunity, Mr. Shanker will make a statement some other appropriate way, but he'll go anywhere he has to make a statement.
Well, apparently Mr. Shanker wishes to make a statement about a statement made by another union leader in New York yesterday respecting my candidacy. I will not characterize it anymore. And so he will I'm sure, find press availability. He's a very important union leader and in order to make that statement. So I don't think there's any point in my delaying you because we're uncertain about the time of his arrival. Are there any questions anyone wants to ask him? Please.
I would like to say this, that in my correspondence with you regarding the Social Security that we went through last year, of all the ups and downs and the, right. and the letters that we had the right to keep that, what we had, that little mark. Do you think there's any outlook of that improving, or is there we're going to have the same thing over again every year or so?
No, I think the outlook is the following. We're going to raise taxes, you know, on Social Security next year by some $9 billion. And I have favored a tax cut to accommodate that. I believe a tax cut in the interests of workers in the country should be shared 50-50 between business and the individual. The business tax cut being an absolutely essential incentive to modernize the American industrial machine, which is growing very seriously obsolescent, and it's against all your interests. And the rest, the other 50%, to be for the purpose I've just described, that is to take the burden out of the increase in Social Security taxes. But I think what you're going to see is that, aside from the cost of living adjustment, that it's going to be very difficult to increase Social Security payments. Therefore, in my judgment, two things have to be done. One, to keep them level, we may have to go to some general revenue financing unless we strip Social Security of disability. In other words, have the disability a separate system. And that, I think, will give us a little latitude, which we don't have now. Secondly, I think we have to have a new emphasis on private pension system. We have 115 million people covered by Social Security. We only have 30 plus, maybe one or two, covered by private pension system. And now that the private pension system is a lot securer because it has federal government insurance. By the way, it costs the federal government nothing, because it is strictly a premium payment. And that goes for the new bill I'm just talking about. That costs the federal government nothing because we simply had to increase the premium on the insurance coverage, which we did. So I hope very much that if I am returned, a new effort may be made to develop more private pension participants. And that will take something of the load off Social Security. Not that we'll be able to increase it, aside from cost of living adjustments, but that more people will have also something in the private pension system to draw on. That, I think, is the best solution.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator. Ms. Hooper certainly recommended that you get what's mentioned on Lauerborn. And I'll be in contact with you as soon as that comes out.
Mr. Ben Benick is telling me I may get a little money from the steel workers, and that'll be extremely delightful.
Senator, can I just ask you, along so many times with perhaps easier races, what do you react to having a battle like this after so many years?
Well, I think it's demonstrating to the people of the state that I'm neither old nor infirm. And that, I think, is worth it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Dan. Yeah, all of us.
I think we better get. I better get going.
Go watch those reports, sir.
Thank you so much.
Koch was new and didn't quite know how to go about it. Moynihan was a freshman. And that you orchestrated the whole thing.
Well, I don't wish to deny one whit of credit to Senator Moynihan. I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. See, he was smart enough to make an absolute play for the Finance Committee. And it was very important to secure that base, as Russell Long, you know, could spill us. Though it wasn't his committee, Proxmire's committee. Uh-huh. But nonetheless, he could be a very powerful opponent. Mm-hmm. And so and in addition, when you're on finance, you can do a lot of people favors.
Okay.
You know, a little tax thing here and there and the other one. Mm-hmm. So Moynihan's being on that committee, even though he was new, was very helpful. And then he did sit through the hearings with and we questioned the witnesses. I thought he did very well. Also, I think it's also fair to say, of course, that a basis had been laid in 75 when I had to handle it alone, because Buckley was very unsympathetic to our plight, which gave New York the nature of a national city. Mm-hmm. So that helped a lot when we came along. That question was no longer challenged. Okay. The question was not whether there was any justification for it in the experience of the Senate. The question was, should we in this particular instance, and if so, how? Well, there was a lot gained by the previous fight which we had won.
Okay.
Now that's the net of the New York City experience.
All right. Now you just did something which some of your aides have expressed, past aides have expressed frustration. They say that you don't take credit for all the things you do and that you're modest, and that is one of the reasons they feel you're having problems this time, because your name isn't associated with all the things you've done. Why do you feel that way?
Oh, I'm not calculated about it. It just seems to me that when people work hard and pitch in and do their part, they should be recognized. I'm not telling you anything that isn't true. Mm-hmm. And I kind of have a feeling that voters are not all that intrigued with blowing your own trumpet all the time. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're in another day. I don't think so. But I don't think that's the thing that's, you know, hurt me. Certainly very well. Very well known, extremely highly respected, I believe. I believe what's hurt me is the fact that this rather low-level campaign of, you know, my age and health sank in, and that it seemed to have an appeal or credibility to people, which surprises me, but which are all those facts of life.
The night of the primary, were you surprised at the outcome, or at that point were you expecting?
No, I was not expecting. I was surprised. I thought I would win the primary. I didn't think it would be a great victory, but I thought I would win.
Yeah.
And of course, the
the reported figures indicated that I should have won. But apparently that didn't hold up.
At that point, did you consider at all dropping out of the race?
I don't think I considered it at that point. Because that very night I said that I'd go on. I think when I did consider it was after I began to appraise what it would take to go on. Without one of the major parties, I've never run without one of them.
Right. After you were appraising what it would cost. Around.
Yeah, it would cost a great deal, and I would have no political organization in the various parts of the state. And it is that which gave me great pause. But I finally decided that when I had announced that I would run, I had said that I'm giving the people an opportunity to decide if they wanted me further to stay in the Senate. And it seemed to me that I was denying them that opportunity if I quit then and there. And that if I really wished to afford the opportunity that I said I wanted to give them, I had to continue. And so I did. Notwithstanding the greater difficulty of waging a campaign.
How long would you say you wavered or considered?
Oh, I wouldn't say I wavered, but combined with the fact that the Senate was still in session, mm-hmm. I had things that really needed me, like the higher education bill. I would say about 2 weeks.
Let me ask you, if you're not reelected, would you consider taking a position with the next administration, or would you want it, or would you drop that?
I have no idea. I don't know what the next administration would be, and really I'm not speculating on what I would do, except that. And I can't assume that I will hold any other government office. So my own thinking is along lines which, if I were not in government service, would be teaching and lawyering. Those are my, it's my profession, that's what I know most about.
Back in New York?
Yes, oh sure. No, I have no attraction. New York's my town, and the state is my state.
It's going to win.
And I would expect to be, involved in many things. But I believe that my chances to win are pretty good. And I believe that I'm electable in New York on the Liberal Party ticket.
Let me ask you something. I've heard you. You did it yesterday, for instance, when Liz Taylor was with you. I've heard you several times talk about how you believe in a two-party system, and that's why Governor Reagan should be supported, not Anderson. And it strikes me as an odd thing for you to say when you're running, when you yourself are no longer running.
It's a very unusual thing. I am a Republican. I intend to stay one.
Mm-hmm.
So, insofar as I can, within where I stand, I am trying to sustain the two-party system.
But some would say to be consistent that you should have stopped.
No, because I'm not a blind party man.
Okay.
And in my case, I think that I have unique assets for the people of my state, which they have themselves created. And that is my highest responsibility.
Do you feel at all angry or betrayed that the people of the state, when they finally have put you in a position where you have such power, seem to be turning away or wavering?
No. I don't feel either angry or betrayed. It makes me unhappy when I think about it. But
God, and the people who acted as they did probably had reasons good and sufficient to them. And it is a fact that the leader, Margiotta, turned out a number of voters that was absolutely extraordinary. So, you know, I can't throw myself against a matter with which I really had nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And couldn't have anything to do. Mm-hmm. My people just didn't turn out. Inadequate numbers.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you, I've been looking a lot into, you know, as I said, I've been talking to a lot of people.
From various aspects of the Republican platform right then and there at the convention. Another example is when I...
About the ERA, the anti...
The ERA, abortion, you know, a number of things. Litmus paper test for judges, 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. The moment that the talk about Ford running for vice president came up, I expressed myself as thinking it would be a disaster for the nation.
Because
he can't have two presidents. And he can't have two staffs at war with each other. I was immediate. And I have taken immediate position on other things, you know, where crisis comes up. And I take an immediate stand. Because I think it's right. About myself, and, you know, how important I should be, I've always been deliberate. Mm-hmm. I've never leaped at career opportunities for me personally. Mm-hmm. That's probably just my nature. So I haven't done badly. Kids from the Lower East Side.
I've never used one of these things before.
Yeah, Jennifer is an expert.
Well, I used to.
You got it.
No, the bottom first. Put the bottom in first.
You want some help?
I went in and bought it yesterday after I couldn't get near enough to hear you speak, and realized if I had had a tape recorder to hold up by George Washington's head, I would have gotten what you and those were saying. Some people have criticized and said that they would have liked you to have spoken out earlier on Watergate. They would have liked you to come out and criticize Nixon earlier.
I went through the Watergate thing in the 74 campaign. Okay. That's what Clark was his main charge against. Mm-hmm. And my reply was that I'm a thoroughgoing lawyer. I could have been right, I could have been wrong, but I looked at the Nixon thing. In the first place, I had no doubt whatever about his culpability, and said so. But what I did not do, or what I couldn't bring myself to do as a lawyer, was to demand his resignation. Because my point was that he should be tried, and he should be dismissed. On the ground that a good lawyer never asks his client to plead guilty. Every man is entitled to a trial, no matter how bad the record looks. And that was the thing. I may have been, as I say, too stubborn about it. And it is true, after all, that I was not his lawyer. I was a lawyer. I am a lawyer by profession. But I made it very clear that I have no hesitancy whatever if the facts stood up as they were reported to us, that I would vote to dismiss him. But I thought that it was
that that was a sound due process point of view. Mm-hmm. But it was very costly to me in the election. It really was.
But you'd do it over again.
I don't know. I rather think I probably would. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that for sure. Because it's the lawyer in me.
Many people have said that in the Senate you have a talent for working out compromises when other people can't. Is that, why has that developed? Is it because of your position, you know, as a liberal Republican, or is it just your nature, or the lawyer in you?
Well, I think it's a combination of my nature, the lawyer in me, and the fact that I have a very resourceful mind for feasible alternatives. I've often done it right on the Senate floor when people seem to be locked in deadly combat to get something settled just by working out the right combination of words or picking up an idea and saying, all right, let's agree on that. And that seemed to cut the Gordian knot.
I wanted to ask you, going back to your support of Reagan, you voted with Carter this past year about 82% of the time, I think it's the big
Well, driver. Allegedly with Carter. It's not accurate.
Okay. Go ahead.
The motto syndrome.
Uh-huh.
The fact is that half of those votes were votes for ambassadors and other State Department people, or rather people, you know, come out of the State Department.
Okay.
And treaties. And nothing has gotten out of the Foreign Relations Committee that I don't agree with. I never vote in international affairs on the theory that I have to vote against the president because he's a Democrat and I'm a Republican. And in view of the fact that I've had pretty decisive impact on what came out of that committee. I voted with him because it came out of the executive department, and by the time it got to the floor, it had been put in such shape that I could be for it. So there was really no big deal in that. But in the Motto's book, it was easy enough to make that seem like I was not really what he called a mainstream Republican. Whatever that is.
You've been much more in the debates with D'Amato and Holtzman. You've been speaking much more than you were in the first debates, and you've been much more, you've been delineating more your differences with Holtzman than you were. Is this